Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett.
No, you're not. You're Preston. Following her time as both a student and teacher at BYU, Dr. Margaret Descano describes her feminist awakening there at BYU. We'll learn more about that spiritual journey in our next conversation. You won't want to miss it. Check out our conversation. Hey, I also want to mention that Beyond the Block seeks to center the narratives of the marginalized in conversations on Mormonism. A Black lifelong member and queer theologian, Brother Jones and Brother Knox, seek to fill the gaps between Mormon theology and Mormon culture, that people of all kinds of identities may claim a seat at the table of Christ. Now back to our conversation with Margaret.
As a student, as, you know, just a person at BYU, that I saw how many inequities there were, that I began to think about it in a religious context, too, and asking the question, you know, I wanted to be a serious scholar of the scriptures. And you look in the scriptures and you have all these men, right? Oh, yeah, you can find a few women.
Phoebe.
Yeah, well, Phoebe there. I mean, the more you look, the more you find.
Mm-hmm.
Or even, you know, in my study of classics, at that period, one of the first books about ancient Greek and Roman women was published in 1974. And until 1974, if you were studying classical languages, almost no one would even mention women other than Sappho, the great poetess, right? Sappho, the poet from, 700 BC. And we only have fragments of her writings. Compared to, like, Plato, the philosopher, we have volumes of his works. And yet the ancients saw Sappho as this great poet. But we only have fragments of her work. But in classics, it was, again, so male-dominated. And I think it's hard to see that now. I mean, so if you think about 1974, one book comes out about women in ancient Greece and Rome. Now there are hundreds of books about women.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was that really so male, not just male-dominated, but male-centered, male-focused. Men's writings are important. Who cares what women do? And I felt that on a really visceral level of feeling so marginalized and so devalued in terms of who I was. And so then, because it started in that context of BYU, the scholarly world, and then I started asking the question about the religion, as I just said. And I thought my question was, as a believer, does God really want me to be secondary to men? Oh, I know the rhetoric. Even then, there was the rhetoric of, men have all these roles, but the role of womanhood and motherhood is so important. And when I first started asking these questions, I hadn't had children yet. And it wasn't that I didn't want to be a mother or that I didn't value, you know, some of those traditional roles as a woman. But for me, the question was more, but I thought, well, I also have spiritual aspirations that are usually only connected to men. So when I would read the scriptures and you read about Abraham desiring priesthood, or you have Nephi who wants to know the things of God, and you have these models of these great, you know, priests and prophets, and you think, I feel the same way. It wasn't like I wanted some high church office or I cared about offices, but at that point in my life, it was about the spirituality that I only saw the role models in either the Bible, the Book of Mormon, or even church history as men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's interesting that in the 70s, this is the same period when you get women like Laurel Thatcher Ulrich and Claudia Bushman and others who were in Boston starting to find and dig out, and, you know, Joel Mulvey Durr, others trying to dig out Mormon women's history. But you have to understand now, I mean, it's interesting, now it's like 40-something years, but there was a gap, even in women's history, that women were you know, they were only there as either the mothers or the wives of great men, right? Except for a few exceptions, like somebody like Sappho. And so it was like, is it wrong for me as a woman to want to be more than simply a mother? And again, I think one of the dangerous things that happens, it doesn't happen as much now as it used to, but I think it's still there in the church, is that if you say, as a woman, I want something more, either a career or priesthood or some kind of thing that you're passionate about, you're seen as like I hate motherhood. I don't want children. I don't like men, right? And it's such a false dichotomy, mm-hmm. you know, and it's this tension that men have not been forced in that same position to say, oh, I have to choose between being a father and being a math professor, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's great that you're a math professor because you're going to provide for your family, right? And a man should have a good career. But if I want a career, then I must not like motherhood. You know, and even I think it's really interesting if I look at...
Who's going to watch your kids while you do all this stuff?
Well,
right?
And then
men don't get that question.
No, they do not. And by the way, one of the reasons I think it's really interesting, so I'm now like a tenured professor here at the U. Mm-hmm. I'm the chair of my department, but and people can do the math, so I might as well get rid of my, my all of my vanity and say, I am 70 years old.
Oh, wow.
Okay, I'm 70 years old.
I still don't like to tell people how old I
am. I know,
I
don't either. This was like a major confession, Rick, for me to give that on a thing. But, you know, you can look it up, right? But I'm saying it because I had children and was married, starting with my master's and then my PhD, everything took me longer.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, now people will say, oh, I've had people say this to me. Oh, you prefer your career to your children. You ignored your children to have this great career. And I sort of laugh and think, well, first of all, you know, I did not go the traditional route of academics where you just kind of go through the ranks and you go to this big, nice school and then you get hired. I started out always, I like to say that maybe not only did I come through the back door, but I came through the basement door. So, you know, when I was working on my master's, I got married. I had two children while I was writing my thesis. So, yes, that took me a lot longer. In fact, I remember that I was, and this is the other thing I wanted to mention, it's like I have been a very devoted mother. And the very fact that I feel defensive about that, right,
mm-hmm.
that I have to say, because I've been accused, oh, you know, you prefer your career. And I say, when I was working on my master's thesis, that was when Paul was first an attorney. So he would go to work all day, and I had these two little kids. And, you know, from the time I was pregnant with the first one and then kind of the first two babies, he would come home. We lived in Provo at the time, or Orem. And I would go to the library between 7 and 11 at night.
Wow.
To do my master's thesis and do my research.
That's tough.
But I was, and then of course, I was nursing my baby. So you nurse the baby, and this was the day before all the elaborate breast pumps, right? So maybe you don't want to know about that. But but at any rate, so I'd nurse the baby, hope she slept, right? And then rush off to the library, do my work, kind of get materials, hope I might have a little bit of time during the day, but none of my babies slept well.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, do some work. So I'm working like crazy to finish this master's thesis. And then right about the same time that I finished the master's thesis is when I started getting interested in, I found the E-Hat and cookbook with the Joseph Smith material. And I'll come back to that, but I want to finish the professional trajectory, which really connects to this tension I felt between what is it to be a good Mormon woman and do my desires and ambitions conflict with that? What does God want of me? And how does God view women in this bigger scheme of things? So really, that question is just kind of building up in me over the years, you know, starting in the 70s and feeling marginalized and ignored and invisible at BYU no matter what I did, and then getting married and I'm having my kids, and then I'm starting to get interested in Mormon history and also in biblical studies and thinking about women within, you know, the biblical narratives, and then I do my thesis. And then I start really looking at these documents about the church. And 1984 was when I gave, when I did my first public speech on women in priesthood. And I'll come back to that. But so that's happening. But to go to my professional life, so I'm really involved in Mormon studies and Mormon things from the 70s, the 80s, the 90s. I started my PhD in 1988. After I'd already published some things in Mormon studies, and because I realized, and here it goes back to these tensions, right, that I really loved teaching on a university level. I had been an adjunct teacher already, so 88, I'd already been an adjunct teacher, you know, for like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
With my master's degree, and I'm thinking I can never move beyond the adjunct position if I don't have a PhD,
yep.
And I really want to get that. So when I started my PhD, I had my four little girls. My oldest, my youngest was four, and my oldest was 9, 10.
Hmm.
But
they were pretty close together then, it sounds like.
They were very close together.
Yeah.
So I wanted to do that PhD, but it took me a lot of years. It actually took me 12 years to finish my PhD. For two reasons. Three reasons. I was raising my family at the same time. And, you know, here again, I'll sound really defensive. You know, I actually never worked full time until my youngest was 12.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, why do I feel like I have to say that? I was a dedicated mother, right? But again, that's what you're put into, this kind of defensiveness. And, but so I'm, you know, taking my kids to school, going to a class, going home and pick them up, make them dinner, 11 to 2, work on my papers for my classes, you know, trying to do this PhD. So it took me 12 years, raising my family. I was also still involved in Mormon studies, and my PhD was in, and I did it here at the University of Utah.
Go Utes.
So 2 degrees from BYU, 1 from the University of Utah, and then, I'm, you know, trying to be the good mom. I'm still doing as much as I can in Mormon studies, but I'm working on this degree, which is indirectly related because I did it in comparative literary and culture studies. So comparative literature, at that time, you had to qualify in 3 languages. In order to do a comparative degree. And it's a long story, which I won't get into that because that's too much of a tangent. But I also had a really bad chair advisor that just gave me so many problems. So I had to switch my topic of my dissertation halfway through, and that added several years just doing this new topic. And my topic finally was on medieval women mystics. So it was still dealing with gender and religion, but set in the medieval world.
Okay.
So I'm really a comparatist in terms of that. So all the while I'm doing that, I started teaching here at the U in before I finished my PhD in 96, teaching Latin and Greek and a lot of other things, whatever that they would give me, right? Because mm-hmm. I wanted to get my foot in the door, as they say. And first I was an associate instructor. Then after I finished my degree, I became sort of more like what we now call career line. And by miracle of miracles, I got a tenure position in 2006.
Oh, wow.
But if you think about it, I often laugh that I'm probably one of the oldest people to ever get tenure, because by the time I got my tenure position, I'd actually been teaching I first taught at BYU, then Salt Lake Community College, and then here, I've been teaching like 20-something years.
Wow.
So it's kind of unusual. I see it as a miracle that I got my tenure line position, and then I didn't get tenure till 2013, so you can do the math. I was already old, right? But I say, well, I have lots of energy. I'm not going to give up. But I told that whole long story to say that, you know, to be, to kind of, to have, a family, to be involved in these things. And, you know, if I would have done the regular thing, I wouldn't have stayed at Utah to get my PhD. I love this university, but they didn't have, like, the best program. I mean, I would have gone to get a classics degree or do biblical studies or something like that. But my family, my husband were here. I got my degree here. And that was a disadvantage, actually, in getting the tenure track position, because we don't like to hire our own PhDs, right?
I was going
to
say that.
Yeah. But I, you know, again, I see it as sort of a miracle.
Well, Paul Reeve did the same thing.
Yeah.
He got his degree here, and now he teaches here. So
no, it's
it does
true.
Happen. It's just
it
not,
does happen. Yeah. It's not the they see as the advised thing.
Right. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Margaret Toscano. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about Margaret's faith journey and her involvement with a group known as the September Six.
So in kind of talking about both my academic and spiritual journey, I, of course, haven't talked yet about my excommunication.
Yes.
And
I was going to ask you, are you September 6 1/2?
Yeah, I love that term, Rick. It makes me laugh.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com, and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.